Now this morning, as we begin this study, let us with open minds, and yet may I say with critical minds. And I do not hesitate to suggest that you take a critical attitude toward what we will study. In the same way that I critically analyze things in the thought paper, I am not above critical analysis. And so I want you to take the same kind of attitude in this study, but let's do it with an open mind as to what constitutes truth, so long as it's based on this word. First, I want to review a point or two with you that we've studied, because this study is going to be a continuation of the study yesterday on the message of the sanctuary. Point number one for review. The sin offering of the sanctuary services made provision for two classes of sin, individual and corporate. All right, now let's just review that point so that we have that clearly in our mind. The sanctuary service made provision for two types of sin, individual and corporate. And that's found in Leviticus 4. When a ruler, that is, a priest or a chieftain, sinned, or a common person sinned, there was a prescribed ritual. And the ritual is concluded here in the court. When the whole congregation sinned, the elders made the confession, and the blood was taken into the first apartment of the sanctuary. And the registry of that confession was made on the horns of the altar of incense in the first apartment. All right? In other words, individual and corporate. Now, the second point of review. The Bible pictures a judgment before the Ancient of Days in one place. In Daniel 7, it says, thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit. And before him were thousands and thousands and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set and the books were opened. In other words, the Ancient of Days in the one place in that heavenly sanctuary. And we perceive it to be the most holy place. Now we also found out, as we studied previously, that the setting of the prophecy that brings about an understanding of the Ancient of Days there in that judgment, that the setting of that prophecy is in the history of nations. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, Rome, the little horn, and then the Ancient of Days, the great words that the horn spake, and finally the Son of Man brought before the Ancient of Days. The whole prophecy of judgment, as pictured in the book of Daniel, is in the setting of nations. Nations are corporate bodies. And in the typical sin offerings, corporate repentance, as we've noted, was brought before the inner veil where the Ancient of Days is symbolized as being. The Shekinah glory, the one that dwells within the most holy place. The individual, on the other hand, as we also observed, had to deal with the common priest who partook of the guilt and the flesh of the sin offering in the court. In the court. The common priest also made a provision of atonement, or made an atonement, which provided forgiveness. The common priest made an atonement that provided for forgiveness. Now we also noted in our discussion, and we will notice in detail today, that the sanctuary service also pictures a one-day judgment. The sanctuary itself pictures a one-day judgment. The judgment before the Ancient of Days began when? 1844. And at least how long has it continued? Now let me repeat that, and so that you'll get the full force of the significance of that fact. In the typical sanctuary. And in contrast to the prophecy of Daniel 7, in one place and a continuum, the sanctuary service, Day of Atonement, covers three stages in succession, and all at all three locations in the typical layout. Now let me go back on that, because that's an important point for you to remember. In the typical outline, the pattern, it pictures on the Day of Atonement, one day, Yom Kippur, a three-stage progressive cleansing. Now then, what is God saying in the type, and how does it relate to the antitype? Now let us carefully this morning, for this first part, carefully analyze the services on the Day of Atonement. Let's notice first the designation that's given to this day. Turn to Exodus, the 30th chapter and the 10th verse. Exodus 30, verse 10. And Aaron shall make an atonement upon the horns of the altar of it. And Aaron shall make an atonement upon the horns of it once in a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonements, plural. Once in a year shall he make atonement upon it throughout your generations. It is most holy unto the Lord. This is a description of the altar of burnt incense in the first apartment. And here the command is that Aaron shall make an atonement upon the horns of it with the blood offering, or the blood of the sin offering of atonements, plural. All right, we find also in Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, speaking of the Day of Atonement, it says this, beginning with the 27th and the 28th verses. Also in the 10th month, on the 10th day of this 7th month, there shall be a Day of Atonements. The Hebrew is plural. Leviticus 23, verse 27. Also on Leviticus 23, verse 27. I'm sorry. Leviticus 23, 27, and 28. Also on the 10th day of this 7th month, there shall be a Day of Atonements. And in the Hebrew, that's plural again. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And ye shall do no work in that same day, for it is a Day of Atonements, plural, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God. All right, here's the plural. These are the plurals. In other words, it's a Day of Atonements that makes an atonement. All right, now then, we have to ask ourselves a question. Is this plural? Because in the Hebrew, a plural can have two aspects. Is it what's called the majestic plural? In other words, they make it plural because of the majesty connected with it. Or was it multiple? All right, now we can look at it from both directions. In Leviticus 16:33, it would reveal that it's a multiple. If you turn back to Leviticus 16, notice verse 33, you find there's a multiple atonement made, or a cleansing resulting in that. The 33rd verse, and he shall make an atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of the congregation, and for the altar, and he shall make an atonement for the priest, and for all the people of the congregation. Multiple atonements. But on the other hand, it can also be conceived of as the majestic plural. It was known as a high day, or simply as the day. And let me read to you just a comment from Kiel and Duchlich on the Commentary of the Old Testament, Volume 1, page 395. And he uses the word expiation in the sense of atonement. Notice what it says. From the expiation effected upon this day, it received the name of the Day of Expiations. In other words, of the highest expiation or atonement. The rabbins called it briefly Yoma, the day par excellence. What was then the day, the 10th day of the 7th month? The day par excellence. And so the plural can carry with it the force of majestic plural, at the same time bringing about a multiple atonements. Now, let us turn to Leviticus, the 16th chapter, where primarily is listed for us in detail the services of that day. And I had planned, after giving a couple introductory comments, to just point out to you the high points of this chapter. But this morning, as I was sitting meditating, at the same time listening to the morning devotion and looking down through this chapter, I decided that what we're going to do, we're going to go down it verse by verse. And I want to point out to you certain things that need to be carefully analyzed as far as this chapter is concerned. First, I want you to note something about the nature of the actual wording. If you will observe the second verse, it says there that the Lord said unto Moses, "Speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he come not at all times into the holy." And those of you that have a Bible that makes the differentiation, the next word is place, and it's in italics. All right, and that's been supplied. And the reason why it has been supplied is because there just isn't there. And they've tried to do it. And so you'll find that throughout this chapter, maybe with one exception or two, it speaks of the holy within the veil. And so what is it really? The Holy of Holies is the second apartment, but here in this chapter it speaks of it merely as the holy. Now in the Septuagint, of which we're going to speak about or discuss at another time this morning, or maybe even into tomorrow morning, depending upon what we do, the Septuagint has simply this. Tohagion. Now, you might as well look at this and get acquainted with it now, because you're going to run into it before we're through this week. This is the word in the Greek that's in the book of Hebrews constantly, where it speaks about Christ entering into the holy. Tahagion. And this word here in the Septuagint in Leviticus 16 is referred to as the most holy place. And this is essential that you recognize this fact, because we're going to have to solve a problem. And I might as well state the problem for you now so that you'll become aware of it. If in Leviticus 16 the most holy place is spoken of in the Septuagint, and that's the Greek translation of the Old Testament, as Tohagion, or derivatives of that, then in the book of Hebrews, when the word is used, then what must it equal on the surface? All right, we're going to have to check that out very carefully, because it's important that we know the difference. And so I'm making no apologies. Even though you say you cannot read the Greek, you can at least give a visual recognition of this word, tohagion. And that thing means simply the H sound. And so what it appears to be transliterated is this. Tohagion or tohagion. Hagion. Now keep this in mind. I'm going to repeat it again, but I want you to remember it. Now the Hebrew, as far as the Hebrew is concerned, is simply El HaKodesh. And Kodesh, we remember that the first thing is either holiness or the sanctuary. And so it's saying simply, be careful when you go into the holiest or the holiness. Don't go in there at all times, or don't go in there into the sanctuary at all times. The sanctuary? The sanctuary described, if you use that same word, the most holy place. Very interesting the uses of words, and it's more than semantics, and we're going to need to keep that in mind. Now, we find that Aaron could not go into the most holy place, but once a year, and then as prescribed, and the reason is given. Notice what it says there in the second verse. You can't go at all times within the holy, within the veil, before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not, for I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. You cannot go in there at all times because I am going to be in there. Only then can you come in under a very specific way. Now we find also that the way that he was to go in, what he was to do, is outlined. And so now let's proceed down through here carefully, verse by verse. And Brother Stump, if you watch this carefully, because I don't want any breaks as far as the continuity is concerned, so the tape... All right. Yet? It'll take more than that. No, no, just keep on this particular thing. If I do get there, we can always start the next one and go on with the service. All right, starting now with the third verse. Thus shall Aaron come into the holy with a young bullock for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He shall put on the holy linen coat and shall have the linen breeches upon his flesh and shall be girded with a linen girdle. And with the linen mitre shall he be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore he shall wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. And he shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of the goats for a sin offering, and 1 ram for a burnt offering. All right, now let us stop at this point and summarize and see just exactly what it said. How many offerings were to be provided to go into the most holy place on the Day of Atonement? How many? What? How many offerings were provided to go into the most holy place on the Day of Atonement? 2. The bullock and 1 of the goats. Now the other things, the rams were for burnt offerings, but the blood of the 2 were to go into the most holy place. All right, now then, let's continue on. And by the way, all these offerings were called what? Sin offerings. All right, now then, how many sin offerings are there on this day? Isn't that interesting how we've been reading? Let's go back and read again. Let's notice the third verse. And thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock for a sin offering. How many is that? All right, now drop down to the fifth verse. And he shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of the goats for a sin offering. How many does that make?
3.
3 kids for sin offerings. 2 kids and a bullock. 2 kids and a bullock. Sin offerings. Now don't get alarmed now and run off with the following is through. We're studying the scriptures and what the scripture says. All right, now notice further. And he shall take the 2 goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the 2 goats, 1 lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. Now you have a margin. It says Hebrew Azazel. It's interesting that Keel and Duffelish, in the commentary of the Old Testament, makes this comment. The words, 1 lot for Jehovah and 1 for Azazel, require unconditionally that Azazel should be regarded as a personal being in opposition to Jehovah. That's very plain. And if you'll take this book, and I want to say again that I find in reading Andreasen's book on the sanctuary that this is where he quoted from also, so I felt that I was a little on safe ground in going and looking at this commentary myself. All right? If you'll take this page, page is volume 1, page 398, and if you'll continue reading down through it, you'll find that they give the language background and show that the conclusion can be inevitably drawn that this Azazel is representative of Satan, the chief of the evil spirits, the one that's in opposition to Jehovah. And so I don't think we have to worry about it and say Adventists have a very peculiar understanding of Azazel. Here's a very highly respected commentary. And by the way, even the evangelicals will publish it. I think the picture is that what he's doing is giving so much instruction, then going back and giving the other instruction, then he's going to come down and line it up as what they did. All right, now it says that, ninth verse, and Aaron shall bring the goat upon which the Lord's lot fell and offer him for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness.
How can you make an atonement with
him? We aren't there yet. We're going to discuss it as we come down through. Let's just keep these facts in mind. But notice it says that he's going to make an atonement with him. All right. Now we come to the description of how it's to be done. And Aaron shall bring the bullock for the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. Now notice here that this bullock is for a sin offering for himself and what? His house. And in the chapter, nowhere was there confession made upon the head of the bullock or upon the head of the Lord's goat. And the emphasis is, as we'll come on down through, and I'm going to call your attention to it, only one time in this service are the hands placed on any one of these three sin offerings. Only one time in this chapter of these three sin offerings are hands placed on the head of the victim. Nothing is placed on the bullock or on the Lord's goat. Well, I'm just going to take it for what it says, his house, the ones that are ministering. All right, now then. And he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense, beaten small, and bring it within the veil. Now, we can break down here and do a lot of finding out whether that veil had to be pushed from one side or we had to creep underneath it and all of that. This is irrelevant to the picture. Let's just move forward. It says he went in. That's the thing. He went in. And he shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony that he die not. Now, keep in mind, this is the type. Aaron is a human being, but he's also representing in type someone. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward, and before the mercy seat which shall he sprinkle of the blood with his finger seven times. Well, the thing is, let me read it again here. And he shall take the blood and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward. Well, okay, that's a detail. I mean, I'm trying to think about it. In other words, he was facing the west, and he had to sprinkle it eastward. All right, that's a detail. All right, let's go on and read the general picture. And then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering. That is for the people. The bullock was for whom?
The house.
The Lord's goat is for what? The people. Interesting, isn't it? And do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. Oh, that'd be the west in front of. All right. 16th verse. And he shall make an atonement for the holy because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions in all their sins. Now, let me ask you now another question. Let's pause right there and I'll ask you some questions for you to think about. Where has all sin been recorded? In the books, all right? In the books. Now, as far as the sanctuary service is concerned, what kind of sins were taken care of here in the sanctuary? All through. What kind of type of sins? All right, that's one description. What type were they? In other words, it says in there that if they sin what? Ignorantly. If they sin ignorantly, and then it comes to their mind, they perform the ceremony. All right, in other words, all sin was not covered in the sanctuary service. In other words, it's only a type of what it's trying to convey. And if you notice that Paul makes note of this, if you hold your place here and turn to Acts, the 13th chapter, you'll find where Paul speaks of this particular point. Acts 13, and the verse is verse 39, or 38. This is his first sermon in Antioch and Pisidia. Be it known unto you, therefore, men and brethren, that through this man, and who is he talking about? Is preached unto you the forgiveness of sins, and by him all that believe and are justified from all things from which ye could not be justified by the law of Moses. All right, there were sins that they could not be justified by the law of Moses, but by this man they will be able to be. And so what does it do? What does it do then? All that's recorded against God's people, when this day of atonement comes, he goes in and makes and brings there, because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel that's here on the record, that brought right in there, and he takes care of it at that particular point of time. Because it says there, their transgression in all their sins, and so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remaineth among them in the midst of their uncleanness. All right, notice now what's happening. He shall come in here, and then he shall do this, and then what's next? And there shall be no man in the tabernacle of the congregation when he goeth in to make an atonement in the holy, until he come out and have made an atonement for himself and for his household and for all the congregation of Israel. There's a two atonements made on that day, an atonement for his household and for all the congregation of Israel. And he shall go out unto the altar that's before the Lord and make an atonement for it. And all the sins of Israel. That's right, he comes in there to make that particular time in there. But, okay, it says in Exodus, where we read it over there in Exodus, was it 29, was it Exodus? I gave it to you first. Exodus 30, verse 10. He makes an atonement for that which has been registered here on this altar of burnt incense. Right there, but you'll see in here there's been no sin recorded during the year. No record of forgiveness, no record, nothing has been recorded in here. Only corporate in here. But he makes this cleansing, makes this atonement, then he comes out here and makes this one, then he comes out here and makes that one.
Is the corporate and the congregation two separate
things? But what I'm saying is, when he makes cleansing for the sins of all the people, it includes these that are in the book, that there's been no line up here.
Because the individual and the corporate? The blood
that
was taken
to
the most holy.
Right.
Why?
Why? Because this was cleansing. This was not forgiveness.
Oh, yeah.
All right, now continue. And there shall be no man in. 18th verse. And he shall go out unto the altar that is before the Lord and make an atonement for it. Now notice the difference now. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock and the blood of the goat, mingling it, and put it upon the horns of the altar around about. All right, the blood of the bullock and the blood of the goat mingled, and this atonement is put as far as the altar is concerned here in the court. Now, there's a very interesting picture that we can probably discuss in just a moment, but let's go on. And he shall sprinkle of the blood upon it with his finger seven times and cleanse it, and shall hallow and hallow it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel. Now here you find that the children of Israel are put together in a collective word, but in reality it was an individual situation day by day. Now notice the 20th verse. And when he had made an end of reconciling the holy and the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar, three things. One, two, three. he shall bring the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. All right, now let's just think what's happened. And as we consider, let's go back and review, and then we can notice the accumulation. All right, as the individual came and made his confession, the transfer of his guilt and his sin, onto the head of his offering day by day, and the registry was here, it was a registry of confessed sin that resulted in forgiveness to the individual. Right? Now, when it had to do with the corporate, it was registered in here, forgiveness. Now, what has Aaron done? Aaron has now gone through, and by cleansing, wiped it away, as it were, he's accumulated these forgiven sins. He's accumulated these forgiven sins. And now all the sins of those that have been forgiven, he takes and puts both hands on the head of the live goat. What sins then is the live goat carrying? He's carrying the confessed, forgiven sins of the people. True, that's true. All right, but the result of that clean blood gathered the confessed sins, and then by that virtue of that blood, it was cleansed, they were taken away, but by virtue of that blood, they were also placed upon this other live goat. Is this clarification? Because we're holding
it's
things up.
Okay.
All right, that's a good question. I've thought about it considerably as to what it possibly could mean. Now remember, keep in mind that the blood of the bullock was for Aaron and his family, and the other was for the people of the in general. Now Christ, Aaron's a type of Christ, the great high priest. All right, now then it has to be represented in type in a dual way, where Christ in himself that way. Does he make provision for the whole, for the people that confess in the whole world? Does he or doesn't he? Beg pardon? Now remember the bullock was for Aaron and his household, those that were intimately, closely associated with him. Right? The book of Revelation calls it the bride of the Lamb. Well, you can draw your own conclusions. I'm interested only in the sanctuary service. So he does this, and when he comes out here and mingles it, this is, where do we come? I don't care whether you're part of the 144,000, that special group, or there. Where do you have to begin? The highest point that man can attain is where? Let's never forget this point. You can't get any higher than the cross. And if you think you can work your way into here, you're lost. The highest point that you can come to the foot of the cross, and this is the whole evidence that's being brought here as far as this blood is concerned, and it's mingled at this point. For the household, the blood of the household, the blood for all. It's done here, and this great central point, the cross, is the center of all of it. Christ didn't die again in 1844. The whole point centers in this. The blood always ultimately comes back to this altar. Hold on to questions that are not clarifications until we get to the discussion, please, because we're going to get prolonged here, and I need to get this on the tape. All right, now let's go on to we've already talked about the gathering of everything, and now we're going to come to the antitypical end of the Day of Atonement and the last phase of judgment, and let's hold it at that point.